Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio Network, 1480kphx.com. Our Exopolitics Radio audio archives and our home site where you can find copies of the book Exopolitics and of the CD-ROM of Season 1, Uncut, is at www.exopoliticsradio.com. And yes, we're becoming rather well known now. We have been attacked and taken on the likes of the Weekly Standard, the Washington Post, and now the Herald Tribune. So, you know, when the permanent war economy and the neoconservatives attack you through the mainstream media and you come back through the mainstream media, that the game is on. So we're glad to have you listening again, folks. And this week, we're going to venture into an interesting area. We have a program on extraterrestrials and the environment. Exopolitics, extraterrestrials and the environment. Extraterrestrials interventions with nuclear power, specifically with the Indian Point nuclear power plant and the context communication sightings there. Craft half a mile wide over the Indian Point nuclear power plant was just a few days ago. Last week had New York Times articles and others where now they're attempting to, a citizens group, environmental group, is opposing the relicensing of the Indian Point nuclear power plant. Nuclear power plants being, in effect, a low-level nuclear war against the local population and the biosphere. And we have environmentalist Remy Chevalier with us, who is also an expert on the extraterrestrial sightings over nuclear power plants, including the half-mile-wide UFO craft, extraterrestrial craft, over the Indian point power plant. So nuclear war and all of these issues feature high in our perspectives, and we seem to be at that crossroads. I call it the ABC future. A for Armageddon, the world ends in fire. B for global warming, the world ends in ice. And C as the C future, the exopolitical future. I'd like to share with you a letter that I wrote last night to Representative Dennis Kucinich, whom, as you know, is a candidate for president, but he's also has introduced House Resolution 333 to provide for the impeachment of Vice President Richard B. Cheney on high grounds and misdemeanors. And this relates to exopolitics in the following way. Advanced ethical extraterrestrial civilizations have continually signaled the dangers of nuclear weapons through their appearance, nuclear weapons and nuclear technologies, through their reported meetings with at least one U.S. president urging him to abolish the U.S. nuclear weapons program. That's with Dwight Eisenhower in 1954. Through their context communication sightings and their shutting down of U.S. intercontinental missile sites, including in 1967, and through their sightings over nuclear power plants, including in 1984 in the Indian Point sighting. And as we know, Washington, D.C., which is the center of the nuclear arms game on the planet, that's the highest extraterrestrial encounter place in the world. We covered that in the last two programs. And so now there's an issue that we may be coming up to a manufactured World War III, what they call the War of Contracts. In order to make a lot of people a lot of money, they're going to create World War III to destroy probably a large portion of the human race, cause incalculable damage and suffering. It's a matter of historical record that John D. Rockefeller, David Rockefeller's grandfather, made $1 trillion in then current dollars in World War I. And that's how the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds view war. He made $1 trillion. It's the permanent war economy. That's their business. You don't know that much about it because in the 20s, the Rockefellers, through the invention of the science of public relations, bought up the media. So if you're in the United States, you're brainwashed to think, oh, Rockefeller Foundation, medical science. In Latin America, however, they know the horrors of the Rockefeller family. And since I grew up there in Cuba and traveled widely in Latin America, I know that Rockefeller is known as the most evil of the permanent war economy, you know, hyper-capital interests. So here we are, edging toward Armageddon. We're on the eve of destruction. Dear Representative Kucinich, at the September 30th, 2007 Sunday night conference call on the Kennebunkport warning, I was on that conference call. I picked up the phone and called in. The issue of seeking immediate impeachment as a way to avoid the outbreak of war with Iran and a wider World War III was discussed. It was noted that you have publicly indicated you may take Resolution 333, who can forget that number, for the impeachment of Richard B. Cheney for a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives under high constitutional privilege. That was reported, and it was Representative Kucinich who actually stated that he was considering doing so in the media last week. This is a strategy favored by the Kennebunkport warning. See below. What the Kennebunkport warning says is, we call on the House of Representatives to proceed immediately to the impeachment of Cheney as an urgent measure for avoiding a wider and more catastrophic war. Once impeachment has begun, it will be easier for loyal and patriotic military officers to refuse illegal orders coming from the Cheney faction. By the way, folks, the attack on Iran is what they call aggressive war under the statute of the International Criminal Code, under the Rome Statute. So it's a war crime. I mean, Ever since the Nuremberg Principles were adopted in 1945, a crime against peace, or the act of attacking another country in war, is the most serious of war crimes. It's a war crime. I mean, it's become so blatant that the United States is now contemplating war crimes and is gearing up the CIA-controlled mainstream media to brainwash the public into believing that it has a right to go and attack Iran. That is just a country. This is a strategy favored by the Kennebunkport Warning, which was issued on August 24, 2007, 6 days in advance of the leak by constitutionally loyal U.S. Air Force personnel on August 30th, that six nukes were missing on a Minot, North Dakota U.S. Air Force base to Louisiana U.S. Air Force base flight. Representatives Robert F. Drynan, in March 1973, used high constitutional privilege to bring a resolution of impeachment against Richard Nixon. By October 1973, there were 84 such impeachment resolutions. So Representative Kucinich might be the first to bring it. He goes to the House of the Floor for a vote. They have people have to go up and vote. It brings the issue to national attention. Robert Drynan did it in March of 1973 on the Watergate issue. He was the first. Hey, by October, there were 84 impeachment resolutions. If you follow through and exercise high constitutional privilege, this could help the forces trying to avert World War III. I urge you to read the materials below, and with an abundance of caution for future generations, courageously exercise high constitutional privilege as your predecessor, Representative Robert F. Drynan, Society of Jesus, he was a Jesuit, did in March 1973. Your far-reaching action may well help save our nation and planet from a devastating, catastrophic engulfment in a pre-designed war for profit only. With all support and best wishes, Alfred Weber, Juris Doctor, Master of Education. Gee, doesn't it seem like this entire, superstructure that we have, these people need some kind of basic education? Like, this planet is a paradise? Like, all living things are here to enjoy it? Like, you have no right, and it is against international law, to attack another nation. Just a few days ago, I was called by Iranian television, Press TV, and asked to be a commentator on a number of their public affairs programs, and I accepted. And they're very nice over there. They, the Ms. Godsi, her last name is Godsi, Godsi, said, gee, it's really a miracle that I got through to you. All she did was picked up a phone, and I picked up the phone at the other end. And I've been on Iranian television now for 2 or 3 years doing public commentary on all sorts of important issues, ranging from commenting on George W. Bush's choices for Supreme Court justice to issues of war and peace. They're human beings. There's a very ancient culture, a very wise culture, I might add, a very God-oriented culture. And the permanent war economy, as led by Richard B. Cheney, who flunked out of Yale a year ahead of me, who is a known war criminal, have no rights to commit yet another war crime invading that country, aided and abetted by George W. Bush, who was a sadist at Yale, on the Yale campus while I was there, who can barely hang on to his borderline personality from day to day. We have two totally dysfunctional individuals at the helm here. So, Representative Kucinich, it's time. It's time to earn your salary. It's time to step up to the plate, to fill the shoes of Representative Robert F. Drynan, who in March 1973 used high constitutional privilege, walked down the aisle, brought a resolution of impeachment against Richard F. Nixon. And by October 1973, there were 84 such impeachment resolutions, and Nixon resigned. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, and I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Today, we have another in the Exopolitics Radio series on extraterrestrials and the environment, this time on the subject of extraterrestrials and nuclear power, which, as we know from other sources and we'll learn further today, is like a, quote, low-level nuclear war against the population and against the environment. We have as our very special guest a gentleman who I've known for many years, Remy Chevalier. Remy founded the Echo Saloon at the Environmental Nightclub Wetlands in 1989. He is the editor-at-large and webmaster for Electrifying Times, a magazine dedicated to electric vehicles, a newsstand since 1993. An investigative journalist and researcher, Remy contributes to dozens of blogs and magazines. With 30 years of experience as a music promoter, event organizer, and environmental activist, Remy created the Rock the Reactors at rocktheReactors.com campaign in April 2006 to bring national attention to the fight to shut down Indian Point nuclear reactor in New York. And that's what we're going to be focusing on today, the extraterrestrials and our terrestrials, including the New York Times, focusing on Indian Point nuclear reactor in New York. Using viral marketing techniques, securing the participation of dozens of green product sponsors, the Bruised Apple in Peekskill, New York, has dedicated an entire section of their bookshop to Remy's environmental library fund. Welcome, Remy. It's indeed a great pleasure for Exopolitics Radio to have your very special message with us today.
Hi, Alfred. Thank you for this very kind and long introduction. I'm glad to be here.
Well, just to summarize for our listeners, the Indian Point nuclear reactor complex lies on the shores of the Hudson River in the town of Buchanan, New York, in Westchester County. There are two nuclear reactor plants on each site, separated by a fence. As I understand, the only reactor in operation now is site number three of the New York.
Actually, the number one was mothballed.
Right.
And number two and three are operational.
Oh, two is still operating. Now, what is unique and why we're bringing this to Exopolitics Radio, which covers the relations between our human society and advanced civilizations in the universe, is that number one, which you'll be telling us, the Indian Point nuclear plant now faces new challenges from its opponents. You are on the board of advisor of FUSE, Friends United for Sustainable Energy, which is opposing the Indian Point relicensing, and which in September 24th achieved a major newspaper article in the New York Times.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, today we even had an editorial in the New York Post dedicated to what the organization has done. As a member of the advisory board, I can't speak for the organization. I can only speak for myself, by the way.
Right, right. So it's clear that you're speaking for yourself, especially today, since we're going to go into areas that we call frontier science. And secondly, our focus today, our listeners, Remy, are familiar with, and we were discussing it prior to the program, the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communications. And just very briefly, that holds that UFO encounters are like multi-dimensional communications from an advanced civilization to our own, almost in the format of a dream, which is a symbolic communication from one subconscious mind to one conscious mind. And what's of interest here is reports of dramatic sightings of UFOs, apparently extraterrestrial craft, by New York State power authorities stationed at the Indian Point nuclear reactor in Buchanan, New York.
That was back in 1984.
Right.
And it became a central piece of a book by Philip Brigno, who recorded a lot of the sightings along the Hudson Valley at that time called Under Siege, which is probably still quite available at Amazon. And six security guards at Indian Point actually witnessed a craft hover about 30 feet away from one of the domes. I think you mentioned Reactor 3, that may be, for about 15 minutes. And actually, there was written sworn testimony. And that testimony is available. I think if you Google Indian Point and UFO, it's the first thing that actually pops up is the write-up that Philip did of this sighting, which obviously because of the nature of it, because they were security guards at a nuclear power plant, it got a lot of attention and became a central focus of a lot of newspaper articles at the time. It's interesting, I think, that there's been a chronic instance of encounter at nuclear facilities, I think, throughout the history of nuclear power, ever since the first atomic bomb went off on a test site in Nevada. And since then, there's been regular sightings of UFOs along with nuclear activity. And the suspicion I think we probably both share, you and I and your audience, is that there is great concern on the part of these intelligences, which are living probably in a different dimension, different spectrum, who share this space with us, this planet, this universe, because I'm convinced we're not alone. And there might be at this point a concern on their part also, and this is a way for them to demonstrate this and perhaps enable us and empower us to do something to address this. If you recall back in the early 50s, as a matter of fact, there was a film called The Day the Earth Stood Still, which was inspired in great part by what was related to them already by witnesses and UFO contactee of that time period. And so that became the topic of this film, which if your audience hasn't seen it, is a classic. And matter of fact, the architect Frank Lloyd Wright designed the flying saucer for that film. And it's about a UFO that comes to Earth to warn humanity about what it's doing to itself by having unleashed nuclear energy.
Right. And a number of guests on Exopolitics Radio, including Dr. Michael Sala, have reported on the apparent meeting on the night of February 20th, 1954, between then-President Dwight Eisenhower and advanced extraterrestrial ambassadors urging him to abolish the nuclear weapons, the U.S. nuclear weapons program, because of the dangers to the biosphere, the dangers to humanity, and also the dangers to the dimensional ecology within which the extraterrestrials themselves live, which I think you just alluded to earlier.
It's evident that every time we set off a nuclear explosion, every time that we enrich uranium to the point where it becomes the most toxic substance on Earth, that needs to be shielded, because if it does not, you know, it would instantly kill anything in its path for miles around. That upsets the ecology to an enormous extent, especially along the lines of subtle energy fields. We have concerns about nuclear radiation. We have concerns about the radiation that is also emitted by all the electricity that we constantly pump out into our universe, which we are manufacturing ourselves here. You know, we're all solar creatures, and we are the result of the sun shining on this planet, and we live and breathe because we basically soak sunlight. And that is the radiation that we use to live. This is our consciousness. This is who we are. So if on Earth we start to produce energies and electromagnetic fields and radioactive energy fields that start to interfere and compete with the natural background environment, we're creating a whole new soup, a whole new sort of radiant energy soup that we live in that may not be compatible with, you know, life as we know it. And we see this already. The circumstances are changing. We know of very sensitive life forms, for example, like frogs, which are dwindling. Insect populations, some are growing, some are dwindling. Look what's happening to bees. We're still not quite sure, you know, whether that slow these bees are being infected. Is the infection the result of an infection or because they can no longer fight others? We have upset the balance of things by our presence because we are spawning. There's now 7 billion of us. There was only 3 billion of us just half a century ago. And we are changing the environment in which we survive. The carbon dioxide is increasing. The oxygen levels are reducing. The pollutants in the air are becoming toxic to a lot of people who are suffering from asthma. The consequences are dire. And for those of us who are sensitive enough that in our lives we've had experiences, close encounters with alien intelligence, whether they were manifested to us as alien beings, as angels, as fairies, as whatever you want to call it, because it's never really clear, I think, at least to me in my own experience, exactly what these things are. I just know that my senses were in a place that they enabled me, if you want, to have the realization that, you know, I was in the presence of something else that was not from this plane. And a lot of us share that experience. Millions of us share that experience. And right. There seems to be a consensus. And this is the work, for example, that John Mack was doing before he sadly was, you know, hit by that car.
Right.
He started out as an eco-psychologist at Harvard, and then he started doing interviews with contactees. And he came to the realization that the underlying experience that most of us have brought back with us is a deep, deep, deep concern for the ecology of this planet and what we're doing to the Earth and urging us to do something about it. And yes. We are now. I mean, there is now, you know, a green consumer movement in America, which is immense, which is sweeping everybody by storm. You know, everybody's buying a Prius and everybody's concerned about recycling and so the bug is taken on. It's contagious. But there is so much work to do. And the more sensitive we become, the impact that we are having and how that might affect life in general. You see people that are very, very sensitive, for example, to animal rights. And they feel an extreme sense of compassion and affinity and empathy towards, you know, animal species. And I think a lot of us feel the same also, really, like one step beyond this, with life, which is perhaps not manifest to all people here, but which is pretty much almost a daily experience to a lot of sensitives, what people used to call mediums.
That's a very interesting concept, Remy, the concept of a sensitivity to extraterrestrial life. This is Exopolitics Radio. You've been listening to our interview on exopolitics and the environment, their concern with nuclear power plants, and our special guest, Remy Chevalier. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned.
Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Let's resume our interview with environmentalist Remy Chevalier talking about extraterrestrial encounters over the Indian Point nuclear power plant. Extraterrestrials and the environment. They really care, folks. Let's do our part. What I'd like to do is to bring it back with a focus on Indian Point. And first of all, for the next 5 minutes or so, really summarize what happened back on the night of July 24th, 1984. And I'm just reading here from the very excellent article, which, by the way, we'll publish up on exopolitics.com so people can go up there and read it. Quote, the caller told me that there had been, that he had been on duty, namely a guard at the Indian Point nuclear power plant had been on duty that night of July 24th, 1984, and that at about 10:15 p.m., a giant UFO hovered over reactor number 3, no more than 300 feet above the exhaust tower for 15 minutes. So the caller went on to tell me that the event was so shocking that the commander was ready to give orders to shoot the UFO down. He then told me that the object was at least 900 feet from end to end. So 900 feet is 3 football fields, I think, from end to end, and was also witnessed by 11 other guards at the New York Power Authority complex and about a dozen security guards at the adjacent Consolidated Edison plant. And then he talks about going back to a bit later. Also, the police in Peekskill, New York, investigated that night and saw a giant UFO with over a dozen white lights in a V formation moving slowly toward the Indian Point power plant. Sergeant Hoffman, a trained observer, admits he never saw anything like it in his life, so that there's confirmed verification from other trained observers.
I'd like to mention, as a matter of fact, that the official historian of the city of Peekskill, who is the co-director of the Peekskill Museum, is actually very, very involved also with this research. He himself, his name is John Curran, has written a book about alien-human interactions. So if anybody from this show is actually from the area around the Hudson Valley where the Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant sits, you can actually go to the Peekskill Museum and probably discuss this with the official historian of the city, which I find absolutely fascinating that there's this book and this encounter had a profound impact and effect, I think, on the local community, which resonates with this.
And there are reports that subsequent to this event, the reactor number 3 developed a crack. So I'm just continuing with the account here. So he then goes and talks to the manager at Indian Point. After about an hour on the phone, the manager finally agreed to let us talk to the guards. Quote, "We would really like to keep the entire incident quiet," the manager said. This is the manager at Indian Point. Quote, "The reactor is highly controversial, and we know that the," and you'll love this, Remy, "we know that the opponents against nuclear power in the area will use the sighting to their advantage. They might claim that our security people are at risk because they reported a flying saucer." That has to be unique in the annals of nuclear power. Now, according to the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, these extraterrestrials really know exactly what they're doing. And, you know, we fully analyzed, for example, the context communication sighting at the Chicago O'Hare sighting, which came down on November 7, 2006, which was midterm election day, the day in which the neocons lost control of the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives. So they knew exactly what they were doing by coming down on that particular day. Wouldn't you say, and remember that for these ultra-dimensionals, they are in a different set of time-space coordinates. So what we see is 1984 and 2007, they see it in an entirely different dimensional reality. So don't you find it interesting that here we are talking today, and you are one of the leaders of this movement to really oppose and stop the relicensing of Indian Point 2 nuclear reactor in Westchester County. And here we are on Exopolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, Nova M Network, which is a mainstream program, talking about this gigantic UFO sighting 3 football fields on a side. That's a kilometer. No, it's a third of a kilometer.
It's half a mile. It's more than half a mile. Okay. It may very well be that what they did back in 84 was actually to lend support to our efforts today.
Yeah, exactly. But he says, and this is the manager of Indian Point, "We really would like to keep the entire incident quiet. The reactor is highly controversial." Well, why is the reactor controversial? "And we know that the opponents against nuclear power in this area will use the sighting to their advantage. They might claim that our security people are at risk because they reported a flying saucer." Now, Remy, you are the spearhead here of Fuse and of this community effort. You have spent a good part of the last decade, at least, focused on Indian Point. That is your current mission.
Yes. Now, Fuse USA, no doubt, is spearheading the fight to oppose and reject the relicensing of Indian Point. It's comprised of a lot of individuals working very, very hard on the issue.
Okay,
I'm
now.
One, but one little peon in this big, big cause.
I understand, but you're here today on Exopolitics Radio, and we're sort of a unique radio program. So you tell me how you, as an opponent against the nuclear power in the area, will use these sightings to achieve the goals which we all want, to terminate nuclear power at Indian Point and on the face of the earth.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. I mean, you know, whether the world is ready for what we're talking about between ourselves and your audience right now and the realities of this fight to keep Indian Point from running much longer, I don't know how all this is going to gel. How I'm going to use it, frankly, I don't know if I am going to use it. I think we're having a debate and a discussion on what all this means and what the implications might be. I personally feel that in this country there is, without a shadow of a doubt, a spiritual revolution which is very deeply anchored into our unity with this earth and our belief that we need to do something. It's not just the New Age movement or the spirituality movement or the New Consciousness movement. It's also all the churches. It's all the different religions. I think anyone who cares and who feels, who has emotions, understands that we're doing something dramatically wrong to the biosphere, and we need to basically get really busy very, very quickly. It's been the topic of many films, of debates, of discussions, of UN meetings, of governments getting together. And because I happen to be, you know, for better or for worse, what some people call an ultra-sensitive, it's put me in my life growing up into a lot of situations where I was, you know, maybe privy to a lot of things that other people don't usually have a chance to see. And I think that a lot of people in this country are very, very interested and very, you know, curious about all of this. There's been, I think, polls taken that an overwhelming majority of Americans actually believe in UFOs. They believe in extraterrestrial life. They believe that we're not alone. So in that sense, we're not in a minority. We are in a majority. How many people are actually willing and courageous enough to actually speak about it openly so that they're not threatened for their jobs or they're not threatened for their social interactivity so that they're not mislabeled as being kooky? I think there's safety in numbers. And I think as more people discuss these experiences with each other, you know, it comes into play in the social fabric of life. I think in that sense, if people come to realize that maybe nuclear power ain't such a good idea, that maybe we have amazing new technologies and opportunities here to create new means of generating electricity with new electronic systems, that this is what we need to address. And it becomes not only a technological issue, not only an environmental issue, but nuclear power becomes a spiritual issue. And I think it's always been since the beginning of the peace movement. And not only the anti-nuclear movement, but also the anti-war movement and people that are concerned about the widespread use of nuclear weapons. So in that sense, Indian Point is slowly becoming a beacon for a lot of people because it's an issue that didn't go away. Back in 1979, there was a huge concert in Battery Park with an organization called Muse, Musicians United for Safe Energy. They held concerts around New York, I think at Madison Square Garden. They raised a considerable amount of money, and they were all very, very expecting that they were going to be able to get nuclear power to stop. They didn't. They failed. But what they did get is a Mexican standoff, whereby no new plants have been built since that period, but no old ones were shut down either, and everybody sort of went home. And it wasn't until the relicensing process started to take place in this country back in 2000, and also because the nuclear power industry wants to build new reactors to keep their industry going, that can of worms all of a sudden started reopening. So it's suddenly become a national debate all over again. And because Indian Point happens to be so close to New York City, because it's also so short after a major disaster in New York with 9/11 and with the consequences of terrorism, that Indian Point's become a real hot potato for a lot of people.
Right.
I just want to jump in here and say that the prevailing view on Exopolitics Radio is that 9/11 was not the result of terrorism, but of state terrorism, and that it was a false flag operation.
But some people feel that it was an inside job, and I would tend to agree.
Yeah. Okay. But I just wanted to clarify that. We've just about come to the end of this segment, so and we're just beginning to really scratch the surface of the issues here, because what I'd like to do, and we'd like to invite you back, Remy, for a follow-on program, and there begin to get into the issues that were raised in the New York Times and in the New York Post articles, and then maybe come around and see why the manager of Indian Point is, quote, so concerned, why he thinks that the reactor is so controversial, and why he's trying to...
Do you have his name in that article?
Let me see. He just says...
Maybe we could track him down.
The manager, sure.
Let's see if we can track him down. But he says, we really would like to keep the entire incident quiet. Oh, sure. Nothing like an extraterrestrial vehicle a half a mile across seen by police departments, etc. The reactor is highly controversial. I would say so. It's like a low-level nuclear bomb in our community. And we know that opponents against nuclear power in the area will use the sighting to their advantage. Well, Remy, I think that you're being on our program today and in future Exopolitics Radio's segments is certainly proof of that we're bringing the fact that extraterrestrial civilizations are using a context communication theory communication, and we'll be talking about that more in the next segment. But we've come to the end of this time. We've been with Remy Chevalier, who founded the Echo Saloon, who's an advisor on stopping the Indian Point reactor with fuse. Remy, could you quickly give out your website?
Yes, you can find my website at rocktoreactors.com. Since we're doing this show in two parts, if anyone would like to send me an email with a question, a suggestion, or an idea, I'd love to be able to feel, you know, be interactive with your audience, and they can find my email address at the bottom of that of the rocktoreactors.com page. And you'll find a lot of links there to many other organizations and friendly sponsors, and there's a lot there with video and et cetera that people can start to look into.
Great. Thank you for bringing this very important issue and this very important extraterrestrial communication to our context, communication to our attention. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Spiritualism, meditation, and love.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, those of you who in the KPHX listening audience here in Phoenix, Nova M Network, know from listening to our sister program, Out and About, know that we've explored similar themes in these two programs, and that is the recurring cycles of auto-destruction that the human race seems to be embarked on. Now, we might at first say the human race, but then upon closer examination, as things become more transparent, we see that it's a permanent war economy. And then upon closer examination, we see that it's the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization. And then upon closer examination, we see that it's a very narrow band of actors, mainly in the Rockefeller networks in North America, in the Skull and Bone, called Skull and Bones Brother of Death networks, in the City of London House of Rothschild networks worth $100 trillion in the City of London. That's a quasi-independent 677-acre jurisdiction in the center of London. And that brought you World War I, where Rockefeller made, John D. Rockefeller made $1 trillion. That brought you World War II, that had brought you most of the wars, and they now want to bring you World War III for their profit. It's their product. And by contrast, we have advanced extraterrestrial ethical civilizations, which, as we just learned with Remy Chevalier, because they're in a different posture vis-a-vis the time-space coordinates, may have actually implanted the 1984 extraterrestrial vehicle UFO encounter over the Indian Point nuclear power plant, so that it becomes part of the relicensing issue today in 2007. Remember the manager who says, we want to keep this quiet because we know that the opponents of nuclear power are going to use this UFO sighting. They're going to use it to against the nuclear power plant. Well, you're darn tootin'. If you have advanced civilizations that are making a signal that are saying, look out for the dangers of nuclear power, they're making meeting with the President of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower, saying, abolish your nuclear weapons, and they're shutting down U.S. ICBM silos, which might be activated by Richard B. Cheney or George W. Bush if they do attack Iran and there is an escalation. Well, they'll just shut down those silos. Of course we're going to listen to the extraterrestrials and not to these two war criminals that are in power. So therefore, in closing, we urge Representative Dennis Kucinich, with whom I met personally and spoke on the same platform in Toronto, Canada, Preserving Peace in Space, to exercise high constitutional privilege and bring his House Resolution 333 for the immediate impeachment of Richard B. Cheney for high crimes and misdemeanors to the floor of the House of Representatives. Stand up and come and take your place in history and help save this planet. This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX, Progressive Talk Phoenix, and the Nova M Network. Executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director R.V. Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and World War III not day, week, and life. Thank you.